Hi, it's Tony. On today's show, we'll talk to Jeff Passan about Shohei Ohtani and whether that investigation is done. We'll also chat with Tim Legler about the play-in games for the NBA playoffs. But first, commerce, boys and girls.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
That allowed everybody to think, oh boy, a live guy could actually play 54 holes, shotgun start, in shorts, with blaring music, and not have the greatest prep in the world coming into a major championship, yet still win. So if it weren't for Brooks Koepka last year at Oak Hill in Rochester at the PGA Championship, then the answer would be, it's not a big deal.
Well, hey, look at that. There's the dog. The dog is a live fan.
Cookie's fired up.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
So the other day, the socialite comes over to the house, and he brings a letter, because the letter was delivered to the Palm, and he had had dinner at the Palm. I guess maybe Chuck gave him the letter, and he brings the letter over, and I don't open it for a day or so, and then I open it, and it's from Gary Phillips, who's obviously a fan of this show, and he says, "Hi, Tony. I thought you might know these guys. I've certainly heard you mention their names on the show many times. They appeared in a newsletter from my local NPR station, WYSO, in Yellow Springs, Ohio. I enjoyed the show greatly. Thanks for all the enjoyment." And it's a picture of Gene Cornish and Felix Cavalieri.
How about
right?
That?
Founding members of the Rascals. Isn't that great?
That is great.
Yes. I mean, that's mail you like to get. Founding members of the Rascals is always good. Did I tell my drive over the bridge story the other day? Did I tell that story?
I don't believe you did.
Michael, Sean, do you recall me telling that story on Monday?
I do not.
Okay. So I want to tell this. It's a small little story. I'm coming back. We played golf on Saturday at Rehoboth, and I played in the annual Masters tournament there. And I played with guys that I play with all the time, with Alan and with Dickie and with Rick. And we're not very good, and we came in last, either last or next to last, but we had a very good time. I mean, we're all 18s and 20s, whatever it was, and we just didn't make enough points, and our gross was by far the worst because everybody else had real players. You know, I mean, Jay Whitby's out there playing with Steve Harvey. They're going to win. I mean, they're going to win, and in fact, they did win. So the tournament is done at about 12:30, and then there's lunch. And then by 1:30, I say to myself, well, I may as well go home. I may as well drive home. It's a very, very windy day. It's a beautiful day, but it's a very windy day. And why am I staying overnight to drive home in the morning? What is the point in that? So I get in the car, and I drive home, and it's windy. I mean, it is really wind.
It was blowing hard that day.
Yeah, and I'm near the Bay Bridge. Now, I don't like the Bay Bridge. I don't like any bridges. I don't want to go over bridges, but there's no other way to do it.
Yeah.
I'm near the Bay Bridge, and I noticed that on the commercial establishments, that's on 50, right, Michael? You're driving back on...
It's on 50. Now,
50
for you,
West.
When are you officially getting geared up for the bridges? When you pass the outlets on your right, and you just say, I'm doing this?
Yeah, Bay Bridge, no, yeah. When you pass the outlets... And then you feed into the large 50 with three lanes on each side. Then I'm committed. And then I begin to see that the flags on all of these commercial establishments are straight out. There's no slack in them. There's no slack in them at all. And this is significant wind. This is probably 30 to 40 mile an hour wind with maybe gusts higher. And then I see the signs, the road signs. These are the signs you don't want to see.
A tailwind might get you home a little faster, though.
Well, but it was a crosswind. It was a crosswind.
It's going to burn some extra fuel.
It appeared that it was, I don't know where it was blowing, south to north maybe. I don't know. I don't know where I am geographically at that point. But you begin to see the road signs say wind caution. You know, wind caution on the bridge, 40 miles an hour, and it's usually 50 miles an hour. 40 miles an hour, no empty trucks, no tractor trailers. No tractor trailers. Now, I understand that. I mean, these things are high up,
yeah,
and they're in the path of the wind. When you're in a car, you're not in the path of the wind nearly to the same degree as big trucks. So they've got, it's not even wind advisory. They're establishing new rules. It's caution. I hear the rule, the old rules are out, the new rules are in. And I get closer and closer and closer, and I begin to see that there's really no trucks. I mean, there's one truck, which I assume was a full truck.
You would hope so.
Yeah, well, I assume so, and it was in the right-hand lane. I try to go in the middle lane. I get on the bridge, I'm in the middle lane, and now something happens that's problematic for me. I'm going about 50 or 52, thinking everybody's going to slow down because it's 40, and they're not slowing down. And I can't slow down.
Right.
You know, I can't. I'm going 50 to 53. I don't think it's any more than that. I'm trying to keep my pace on the bridge. I'm white-knuckled because I'm terrified of the bridge to begin with.
Right.
And now we're under a wind caution, you know, and nobody's paying attention. And the people who are really not paying attention, I think the bridge is about three, four miles long, the bridge?
4.3 miles long, and it's a slow rise to the middle, and the problem when you have people accelerating like that is they forget there's a downside, which often has backup as people are getting off of the bridge onto the highway again.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then it's Brake City.
So in that amount of time, no fewer than 10 times, no fewer than 10, and I'm going 50 miles an hour, 52, 53 miles an hour, so I'm going to clear the bridge in 5 to 5.5 minutes, right, at that speed?
It's two songs, yep.
Okay. At least 10 Ram trucks, F-150 trucks, in the left-hand lane, going 70.
You can just say a truck. You don't have to call out the brand.
Minimum of 70. Minimum of 70. Yeah. Laughing. Guy in the front laughing. I just go,
unsettling.
Oh, my, it's so unsettling. That's such a good word.
Now, but the surprise is you prefer the middle lane?
Oh, yeah.
I don't like to look out over the side.
You got buffers on either side.
Yeah, I don't like to look out over the side if I can avoid it.
Now, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Whilst this is going on, you know, even before the trucks got there, are you having a running conversation with the other cars? Like, you're doing good, stay there. What's this guy behind me? Are you speaking aloud with any of this?
No.
Or this is just all in your head?
No, you have to identify a lead car.
This is, right. Yeah, this is, yeah, sort of all in my head.
Yes.
But I'm mumbling to myself, but okay. It's sort of mostly in my head.
Because I will actively yell at cars.
Oh, I know.
And they can't hear me because my windows are up or whatever. But you're just like, what are you doing? Yeah. Where are you going, mate? Come on.
Yeah. And they're going so fast. Anyway, I made it. When I got over the bridge, an incredible exhale to get over the bridge. And then I was fine after that. But it was really, really windy. So in the interim, since we were last on, there was the WNBA draft. And I will just say this. I watched a little of it. I certainly wanted to see Caitlin Clark and all of that and watched maybe the first five, six players, those names I was aware of. The WNBA is very, very fortunate because their new season begins, I don't know, by 7 o'clock tonight. I mean, it starts in May. It's right around the corner. And so they can ride the momentum of Caitlin Clark.
Yes.
There's a bunch of questions here. Caitlin Clark was a phenomenon. She was, the games she played in attracted the most turnstile count attendance and attracted the highest television ratings in the history of women's basketball. All women's basketball, not women's college, but all women's basketball. The highest ratings ever. Her. She's the connective tissue in the three highest rated games. Her. Caitlin Clark. Does this transfer? This is what we're all waiting to see. Does it transfer? The Indiana Fever play a 40-game schedule. Everybody plays a 40-game schedule, apparently. 36 of their 40 games are going to be televised nationally in one service or another. 10 of those games will be on either ESPN, ABC, or CBS. And I dare say that's 10 more than the Indiana Fever had last year televised nationally when they had the worst record in the league. So all the bets are on her. I think she's a great passer. I just think that everybody on her team is going to be thrilled. I watched her make passes that because the players in the WNBA are significantly better than in college, just like in the NBA, just like in the NFL. They're much better. They can catch these passes. They can make baskets off these passes. Sometimes at Iowa, Caitlin Clark would throw a great pass for naught because it couldn't be caught. Or what, if it was caught, there was no fluidity going to the basket. That's not going to happen at WNBA. They're good players.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, but what I don't know is does it transfer in the pros where you don't just go one time to the University of Maryland? Will you go to that gym 4 or 5 times during the year? Will it transfer? I mean, I hope it does, you know, because it was exciting to watch her play.
Sure.
I mean, she'd be jacking it up from 32, 33 feet. I mean, you know, you don't see that often. And 40% of the time they went in.
Yeah.
So we wish her luck in that. The play-in games started last night. Tim Legler was our guest last night on PTI, and we talked about the play-in games, and we are fortunate enough to have him on this show, and he is coming up next, and I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Policy Genius read. Are you looking for something else you can do for your family this spring? How about shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius as part of your financial planning for the year? Getting life insurance today means you'll have peace of mind so that if something were to happen to you, your family can cover expenses while they're getting back on their feet. Luckily, Policy Genius helps you compare your options from top companies, and their team of licensed experts is on hand to talk you through it. Policy Genius has licensed award-winning agents and technology that makes it easy to compare life insurance quotes from America's top insurers in just a few clicks to find your lowest price. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million worth of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies. That means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance. Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Do you remember the band Intercontinental, except they spelled it with a 7?
Yes, where the last T is.
Yeah,
yes.
Just sort of weird. Devin Heritage sent us this. Hello again from the first band to record original songs across all 7 continents. Intercontinental, I don't know how to pronounce it, is happy to release their 4th album, which benefits Children's Hospice International. Originated out of Columbia and Annapolis, Maryland, we're the first band with contributions from all 7 continents on all our records. All money raised goes towards charity, this time being Children's Hospice International. We'll play another song from them later. This is called Small Ships. I wish I could pronounce. It's an unpronounceable name if I do it right.
You would kind of just want to say Intercontinental.
That's all I want to say. Anyway, yeah. They play in Tim Legler. Tim was on the PTI show yesterday, a fabulous appearance, and we, Michael and I, begged him to pick the Warriors, and he picked the Warriors. And he picked the Warriors because Steph Curry, the last time they had played the Kings in an important game, had 50. Well, I think the Warriors losing is a bigger story than the Lakers winning, actually, so I'm going to start with it. Steph Curry's a great player. He only took 16 shots. Klay Thompson didn't have any points. Is there a long-term view of this game?
Yeah. Long-term view is the Warriors have some really difficult choices to make this summer. Yeah. And, Tony, I don't see a way in which you sort of stand pat with your main core and continue to be relevant in the Western Conference, because you look at this year, actually, some things fell in place that would have given the Warriors a window here. When you look at some of the teams at the top of the West and some of the issues and questions that they have had or injuries that they dealt with down the stretch, you know, outside of Denver, I felt like there was opportunities there to continue to let people know, hey, we're still relevant. And look, the Warriors were 27-12 to end the year. I mean, they had a very good finish to the season. But what happened yesterday exposed them. When the game was allowed to be more physical, which it was because it was basically a playoff game, and I think that might have been the most physical game I've watched all season in terms of contact that was not called, because it's just not officiated that way in the regular season. And you could just see the inability to have guys that can create their own offense around Curry. And I actually felt sad for him. I felt sorry for him for what he was trying to be forced to do just to keep them in the game in the second half. And the defense played on him by Keegan Murray and Keon Ellis, two longer guys, athletic guys, the way that they were. Any screen he came off of, he had two and three guys jumping out, literally daring anybody else on the Warriors, go make a play, go beat us. And, you know, Klay Thompson had opportunities. He had some clean looks in that game. I'm not saying he makes three or four of those out of the 10 he took. That's going to make a big difference in the final outcome, but at least I think would have kept him somewhat in striking distance. But as a result, it felt like Curry in the second half was sort of out there by himself. And against a Kings team that was just faster, stronger, better defensively, more options of guys that can get their own shot, you get this landslide. And it was really a sad way, I think, for this season to end for the Warriors and in particular for Steph Curry.
Yeah, he's got to have more than 16 shots. They got to lose by less than 24. Klay Thompson's a Hall of Fame player. He's got to score. Long term, obviously, you know, the Warriors have to change because this core, it's done, and it's obvious that it's done. But I'm going to extrapolate here and ask you something. The Olympic team that is going to be named, according to all reports, has all these great older players. Is that a mistake?
Yeah, I think, you know, I kind of feel like it is. And I think what you're seeing, it's an interesting way to put this team together. It's almost like half of it is some of the younger guys that are emerging in this league, and then the other half is a career achievement award.
Yeah.
Like that's what it feels like. And I think with what we have seen in international competition, and if we're going to send pros, and look, there's a whole another argument to be had. Like, do we even need to do that? I'm not saying we can win a gold medal with college players. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, is it the be all to end all to have to go do that and send pros? We did it in 92. We showed everybody, like, this is what we're capable of when we send the best. And it was an absolute, you know, every game was a blowout in the original Dream Team. And over the years, it's kind of, you know, it's become this thing now. Okay, we're going to send pros. Well, if we're going to send pros, then let's go ahead and send guys based on that current year that deserve it the most. And I don't think that that's necessarily what they've done in this case. And then they made some interesting choices, Tony, with some of the guys they picked over, clearly guys that have had better years at the same position, which was really bizarre to me. And young players, like Tyrese Halliburton is a guy they picked over Jalen Brunson, and Drew Holiday makes the team. And you're going, why is that? People are asking, how can they make that team over Jalen Brunson, who's going to probably finish fourth or fifth in the MVP voting? I say, well, Halliburton's a distributor, and they probably want another guy
that's primarily going to set up other people with all this talent around him. And then Drew Holiday is a phenomenal on-the-ball defender, which you're probably going to need in international competition. But as a result, Jalen Brunson, who clearly deserves to be on the team, is left off of it. So there were some very interesting choices. I completely agree with you. Damn. And I don't think the approach was, let's just take the 12 best players we can find currently. And there's still going to be some veterans on that team, obviously some guys that are up there, double-digit years of experience. There's no question you're going to have some of that, but I think they took it too far. And even like a guy like Kawhi Leonard, it feels like they're trying to reward guys for great careers with some of the selection.
Honestly,
it was an interesting way to go about it.
It's like the Eagles' Hell Freezes Over tour. It's like, you know, you're there to be seen. You're not necessarily there to win. I don't think they may not win a gold medal. Let me get to the other game last night. The Lakers beat the Pelicans. The Lakers, as a reward, get Denver. They haven't beaten Denver literally in a calendar year. They have not beaten Denver in a calendar year. But Zion Williamson walked off the court with three and change with leg soreness. What is that? I don't want to make too much of it, but what is that?
Yeah, I don't either, because I don't know what it was. I'm watching this game, and I'm just like everybody else, and he's playing. It's one of the best games I've seen Zion Williamson play as a pro.
Yes.
And in fact, it makes you angry a little bit, because I've been a little bit hard on Zion Williamson over the course of his young career here, because I don't think Zion Williamson brings the level of effort and energy every night that you need to have. Forget the injuries. I'm just talking about when he is healthy. You know, you think about a guy that his rebounding numbers to be six a game is absurd to me. I think he's had double-digit rebounds like four times all year. For a guy that's that explosive, that's that strong and powerful, it just tells you, like, he's not fully engaged in maximum effort. He doesn't sprint the floor as hard as he can. We'll put all that out the window last night, because he did all of those things, and he was incredible last night, but it's not every night. And then he ties the game up, lands, kind of spins out. He didn't grab any part of his body.
No.
It was a really weird thing.
Just
and
took
then
his shirt off.
To the bench. Yeah, he walks to the bench, and then he throws a towel on the ground, and he's gone for the night, and we never heard another word about it. It's like, okay, that was weird. And you already had Brandon Ingram, who had just come back from an injury, was struggling, and they benched him. And I think there's something there that needs to be looked at as well, because I'm watching Brandon Ingram on the bench when they made that big run in the second half, and he was sitting down in the middle of the bench the entire time. He was not standing up. He was not supporting anybody that was out there playing well. He had a very pouty, disengaged look on his face. It was a bad look for Brandon Ingram last night, sitting on the bench. And then C.J. McCollum struggled. So you got two stars don't play well, and then the other one gets hurt on having maybe the game of his life. And as a result, the Lakers are able to make a couple plays late and steal that game.
Yeah, yeah. And I I'm happy that LeBron gets to play more games, but Denver is a tough matchup for anybody. I won't even ask you about Atlanta, Chicago, because Wilbon's not here. I don't care. They're not getting in. I don't care. But Philly, Miami, Joel Embiid, don't know how ready he is to go. Jimmy Butler, Wilbon was complaining the other day, and Wilbon loves Butler. But he says maybe there's something wrong there, but we expect a certain level from Jimmy Butler in important games, and that has not been the case. Who do you like in this one?
Yeah, I like Philly a lot. I agree with that statement about Jimmy Butler. And Joel Embiid, since he came back from the injury, has been absolutely dominant. He looks exactly like he did midseason, like the guy that was going to win an MVP if he stayed healthy. He looks like that guy. And he's got a co-star now that I think is so important to Embiid in particular, and Tyrese Maxey. He uplifts him. He gives him confidence. He's got a joy about him the way he plays. He is not going to go into these dark places in a big moment the way Ben Simmons did, the way James Harden did. He won't leave Joel Embiid out there sort of feeling abandoned in big moments. He's just not. He might not have a great shooting night every night. He's not going to change his aggressiveness, his confidence, or the way that he plays. And Embiid desperately needs that, because his body language has been so affected by those guys next to him that have come up small in those spots that now he underperforms, and then he gets beat up for it afterwards. And I think it's something to be said about that. I mean, you got to grow up, be mature, be a leader, play through that. But it's a fact. Those guys affected him. They were like anchors around his ankle. And that's not what Maxey is. So now he's got Maxey. They added a Buddy Hield, who he really hasn't had a chance to play with yet, as a shooter off of those two guys, and Embiid barely knows the guy. You add Nicholas Batum, Kelly Oubre. I like their pieces. I think they could be the biggest threat to the Boston Celtics when it's all said and done in the Eastern Conference. The bracket broke out right for them as well. you know, you get in, you get the Knicks, you avoid the Celtics until the conference finals. It couldn't have worked out better for Philly, but obviously they've got to take care of business tonight. One game at home. Otherwise, you lose, you'll beat the Hawks or the Bulls, but then you play the Celtics in the first round.
They don't want
your
that.
The difference is go home in five or six games or have a chance to potentially play three rounds. And, oh, by the way, real quick about the Atlanta-Chicago game, the only saving grace about that game tonight is that it's on a half hour earlier than the game was last night, so I can get to bed earlier because I don't think there's a lot of people that are interested in Atlanta-Chicago. I hate to say
that. Not even in Atlanta and Chicago is my guess.
That's right.
You played. You played before the wild card or the play-in, whatever it's called. I like the idea of the play-in very much. I like watching it, but it also gives two-thirds of the teams in the league a playoff opportunity, 20 teams out of 30. I like it in baseball. I like it in basketball. I think they should do it in hockey. I don't think you can in football. I just think it's a different animal in football. But do you like it?
I love it because I'm a proponent for fans, and a lot of things have negatively affected the fans in the NBA. Load management affects fans. Guys being out a lot longer with injuries affects fans when they go to a game and guys aren't playing. So this is for the fans. It keeps more fans in more cities more engaged with hope longer into the year, and I'm all for that. And that, to me, is the number one benefit of the plan.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I do like it. I'll get you out on this. I know you got to do SportsCenter, but we got to talk just briefly about Caitlin Clark because I know how much you like her. What do you think we're going to see in the near term from her in the WNBA?
I think she's going to immediately be a difference maker with her playmaking. Scoring will be a little bit more sporadic.
Yeah.
She's not going to have that type of free reign to take any shots. She won't have to. She's going to have a lot of help around her. She'll still have some of those moments where she puts that on display. But more than anything else, everybody's going to be better on the court that play with her. And I think that is where she immediately guarantees success. And she will be a major impact player, like immediately, but I think primarily because of her playmaking. And then the scoring, I think, will catch up as the season goes on.
Would you put her on the Olympic team?
I absolutely 100% would. It would be the biggest mistake you could make to not capitalize on the interest that she's creating for that team, for women's basketball. Yeah, her jersey sold out in one hour after she was drafted for the Indiana Fever. One hour. Every size was gone. Yeah. You have to put her on to capitalize on the interest that she's creating.
I agree. Thanks for always answering the bell for us. Thank you, Tim. Thank you.
Anytime, Tony. You got it.
Okay, we will come back with Jeff Passan. We have to talk about Shohei Ohtani now that this thing seems to be settled. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Hero Bread read. The carb fear is real, but carb-heavy foods are often the ones we love most.
Mm.
Hero Bread makes those same delicious favorites free of consequences or compromises. They've remade carby, empty-calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. I've had this. I've had this bread.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. I mean,
it sounds great.
Yeah, it toasts great in a Revolution toaster, of course, but it toasts great and it tastes really good. I can't tell the difference, you know. So if you have a healthy product and it tastes exactly the same,
why wouldn't
as
you?
A lesser healthy product? Yes. I won't say unhealthy, but lesser
healthy.
You know, then
I need to try this.
You know, then of course I would do it. I mean, you get enough fiber, you're cutting down on sugar, you're adding protein. Hero Bread has 0 to 1 grams of net carbs, 0 grams sugar. It's high in fiber. It's delicious and flavorful. The soft, fluffy experience you love when enjoying a refreshing BLT, savory breakfast burrito, or mouthwatering cheeseburger. Hero Bread has something for every craving, including sliced bread loaves, buns, and tortillas. Tortillas are great.
Mm-hmm.
They're great. And they also have monthly small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the 2 gram net carb Hero croissant or the 1 gram net carb Hero cheddar biscuit. Somebody should send me that. Don't give up being a breadhead. Hero Bread is offering 10% off on your order. Go to hero.co, C-O, not com, hero.co, and use the code Tony at checkout. That's Tony at hero.co. Use the code, people.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Once again, this is intercontinental, but it's intercontin-sevenal. It's very confusing to me. Devin Heritage sent this stuff, and he says, we've grown to over 37 contributing musicians. Still looking for that kazoo player from Northwest Washington, D.C., if we could pencil you in for the fifth record. The new record's currently available on all streaming platforms. Also, can we have a special shout-out to Navy Youth Hockey Pee Wee White Team? So, you know.
There you go.
That's, I guess Devin is involved in that. This is called Lipstick on Your Collar, but not the Connie Francis.
That's right, Connie Francis.
Lipstick on Your Collar, which told a tale on you, boy. Told a tale on you. And I haven't thought of that horrifying song in at least 60 years. Lipstick on Your Collar said you were untrue.
Yeah.
Told a tale on you. Please stop, Tony. Jeff Passan joins us now, and I want to dive into the Ohtani and the interpreter thing, Jeff, because I have the sort of skepticism questions that a lot of people probably have, and I'm sure they have. Where does this stand now, given that the feds have charged the interpreter with all of it?
It stands where that would suggest, Tony, which is that the government and the IRS agent who put together the 37-page, extremely detailed complaint against Ipe Mitsuhara are essentially saying that Shohei Ohtani was a victim of a fraud here, and that he got $16-plus million stolen from him by his degenerate gambler interpreter. And, you know, as far as Major League Baseball goes, the league hasn't come to any conclusion in its investigation yet, but barring evidence otherwise, Shohei Ohtani is going to go on with his life and continue playing baseball with the Los Angeles Dodgers with, I suppose, the specter of this still hanging over him. But and the cynicism and skepticism that you mentioned seemingly ever present, because there are elements of this story that seem beyond belief. But when the federal government comes in and lays out a complaint as detailed and as dot connecting as this, you got to believe a pretty grand conspiracy is happening otherwise. And Major League Baseball, I think at this point, is just going with Occam's razor, which is that, yeah, while there are some elements of this story that may not make sense to us, there are too many things that the government is saying to be true for us to pursue anything further without evidence to suggest that the conspiracy is actually real.
I would assume that Rob Manfred is thrilled that he's high-fiving everybody in town, and that they are very happy to hear no evil, see no evil, and speak no evil, right?
Yes. Now, I will stand up for Major League Baseball in one respect here, which is that they have not been hesitant to punish players who are big names for offenses in the past, like performance-enhancing drugs, right? I mean, Fernando Tatis Jr. is one of the bigger stars in the game, and he got an 80-game suspension. Ryan Braun was a former MVP. He got a suspension. It's not like they're looking necessarily to bury the bad news. But in this situation, with Ohtani, there is no individual who is more important to baseball. And so the fact that this information and the story that Ohtani told from the jump has been affirmed, seemingly, with a pretty significant heft of evidence behind it, it's the best case scenario for Major League Baseball. And yes, I'm going to acknowledge Major League Baseball did have a really bad situation with the Houston Astros and did absolutely nothing about it. So your instinct there is reasonable.
So let me tell you what happens where people who know about this story, and I'm when I say know about it, just casually know about it, where they gather at golf courses or restaurants or steam rooms or anywhere else in the world. Okay, anywhere. They have skepticism. Like they say, is this credible to you? Do you actually believe this? Do you believe that, A, this guy had access, complete access to Ohtani's bank accounts, and Ohtani didn't look at his own bank accounts, and that banks would allow this to happen? And do you believe that, B, that Ohtani didn't bet on anything, and that they, you know, didn't bet on baseball? And do you believe this, or do you believe that maybe it feels like a deal was struck, and that Ipe is going to serve a certain amount of time, and there's a lot of golden money, you know, coming his way when this is over? And I know that's really cynical, and it may not be supported by fact, but Jeff, did you have any of those feelings as well?
I'm a reporter, Tony, so I'm always going to have some feelings of skepticism, right?
Yeah.
Like, if we don't, then we're not doing our jobs. At the same time, I also take the fact that are presented in front of me. And the facts, as laid out by the investigating officer here, are as follows. The communication was strictly and solely between Matthew Boyer, the alleged bookmaker, and Ipe Mitsuhara. The bets were placed specifically by Ipe Mitsuhara, and it wasn't like 100 or 200 bets. It was 19,000, averaging $12,000 each.
Huge
losses
money.
losses of 183 million, wins of 142 million. You know, there were thousands of pages of text messages between Shohei Ohtani and Ipe Mitsuhara that the feds went through. And there was not one mention, either straightforward or oblique, to gambling of any variety. You know, I just look at that and, yeah, is it possible, Tony? Is it possible that Ohtani, Mitsuhara, the Los Angeles Dodgers, the Los Angeles Angels, the IRS, the Department of Homeland Security, Ohtani's agent, Ohtani's accountant, Ohtani's investment advisors, and Ohtani's bank all got together and got on the same page with a story to protect Ohtani and to put his interpreter in federal prison in all likelihood for multiple years, and that everything has come together in a neat, tidy package.
In a deal.
Seems like near record time. Is that a possibility?
No.
Of course.
Well, it's so slim.
Okay, that's the point, though. Like,
yeah, it's so slim.
Again, it's just... It is possible, yes, but is it the likeliest outcome?
No.
I have a hard time buying that.
No, I know. I this is why I'm doing this, because I appreciate the fact that you know what is going on here and the rest of us don't, and the rest of our skepticism is reasonable skepticism, but for it to work out, the conspiracy would have to be so vast and involve so many people. It makes no sense. On the other hand, Ohtani is a complete mystery man, right?
Totally.
He shows up and says, I just got married. I need to ask you about this. I understand. I mean, I've watched this. I know how Japanese athletes are covered. That how can it possibly be? They're covered so specifically. There are people around them all the time. How could he just say, oh, by the way, I just got married? How would nobody know that?
Okay, so I think the point that you're making here actually has a secondary element that's important. To Shohei Ohtani, being private is paramount. It's something that he has gone out of the way to do. And the Japanese reporters who do follow him, and there are dozens of them every day. I mean, that is their beat, right? It is Shohei Ohtani as a baseball player.
Yes.
There is an element of respect that's in place where they do not hound him. They do not push him. It's not fealty necessarily. But it's almost like they don't want to bother him because he is a king in Japan. And,
yes.
And that's the easiest way to put it. He is, you know, short of a god, but not short by far. And because of that, the sorts of reporting you'd have if you were in New York, for example, or a city that has, you know, reporters that are going to dig into your personal life, it just does not exist around Otani. But the way this connects back to the case itself, you know, people ask the question, how did Otani not know? How can this guy be stealing all this money? And how can he be placing all these bets using his phone? And how can Otani not know? And it comes down to this. The will of a human being to keep something private can be very strong. And the ability to hide something, even in this moment that we're in right now, where it seems like everything in the world is out there for public consumption,
right,
is still quite impressive. And so I think just as Shohei Ohtani has hidden things from the world, Ipe Mitsuhara was able to hide things from Shohei Ohtani.
The only thing I would say, Jeff, in response to that is, there's millions of dollars are flowing in and out of this bank account, huge sums of money, and nobody got in touch specifically with Ohtani, right?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the complaint, Tony, and it says he had not logged into that bank account in 3 years. Now, it may seem like the rest of us who are not on our way to being billionaires would say, you're not logging into your bank account that has tens of millions of dollars. You're not checking. To which I think he would respond, but I have tens of millions of dollars in other bank accounts, too. And
yeah. Yeah.
Right now, I'm trying to take this moment of time and be the best baseball player that anyone has ever seen. And in order to do that, I am devoting all of my energy and resources to that one task. The reason I hire people is because I expect them to handle it, and I trust them to. And the breakdown in this situation, Tony, was that Ipe Mitsuhara had access to this account because he did pay bills and he did do, those functionary tasks that Ohtani didn't want to. But he also, according to the complaint, just straight up lied to the people who were supposed to be protecting Ohtani, his accountant and his financial advisors. Ipe essentially said, Shohei wants to keep this account private. There were a couple of questions that were asked about it, but you have to understand, Ipe was Shohei's way of communicating not just with the world writ large, but with his own little bubble too. And in the failure in this situation was not having somebody independent of Ipe to make sure that he was on the up and up. There was no Japanese employee for Nesbolelo, the agent who negotiated the $700 million contract. And there was no other conduit. And so, I can understand how something like that would happen, because if you are the agent and your client, this mega bucks client is getting a bigger deal than, any baseball player has ever gotten before, says, I trust this interpreter, I trust this person with so many elements of my life. Are you, as the agent who has the ultimate meal ticket, going to sit there and say, well, I don't trust him? A good agent? Yeah. Someone who's doing his or her job?
Yes.
Yep,
yes.
You sure do.
Yes.
In this case, nope, didn't happen. And that's, it shows you the danger in trying to placate athletes and trying to paper over, the cracks that are exposed when they're making bad decisions. And in Otani's case here, it was a really, really bad decision to trust the wrong person. And if this is in fact the full extent of the story, Tony, I just feel bad for Otani because it makes him look naive.
Oh, yes. And I do agree that the agent did not do his job as well. I also can't believe the stones on the interpreter. I cannot believe it. And if you had said to me that on an under-over that Ohtani was not involved at all, that the under is he's not involved at all, I'd have put my house on the over. It is completely remarkable to me. It is. The whole story is completely remarkable, and that's why I wanted to devote all this time to it. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you.
Pleasure is mine, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Jeff Passan, he knows this stuff.
Yes, he does.
Fascinating, isn't it?
Really is.
It's fascinating. We'll take a break. We have email and jingle. When we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Framebridge ad. Everybody has things they want to frame. Everybody has photos they want to frame. Sometimes you have amulets you want to frame. You know, sometimes you have, I don't know, things like if you collect, for example, ball markers from golf courses you've gone to.
Sure.
You might want to put 6, 8, 10, 15, 20 in a frame for your own personal display. You know, that's a reasonable thing to think about and want to do. Framebridge makes it easy to get anything framed at an affordable price. You can easily order online at framebridge.com or visit a Framebridge retail store. You can either upload a digital photo for them to print and mail your item using their free, secure, prepaid packaging, or you can just visit one of their over 20 retail stores. Framebridge custom frames your piece in their studio using the highest quality material, ships it to your door in days for free. Framebridge makes it easy and affordable to custom frame just about anything. I know that Michael and Liz have a lot of stuff.
Sure.
Framebridge.
Yeah,
I've Have you used it?
Sure. I took a picture of a great blue heron right at his landing. It's a better photo than I ever had any business taking. And people were like, I'd like that framed. And Framebridge did it perfectly.
Yeah. They have a fair and transparent upfront pricing based simply on the size of your item. They also have a curated selection of frame styles with design experts on hand who make it fun to choose the perfect frame. Your happiness is guaranteed. If you're not 100% happy with your piece, they'll make it right. See why Framebridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit framebridge.com or a local Framebridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything. That is framebridge.com.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I love this. Then why do you need to go on a cruise when you can play this and feel just as wet? It's totally immersing. You're swimming. You're swimming with dolphins.
Yes.
That's fantastic. Jeremy Vint. Just great.
Yes.
Every time we play it, it's just great. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad, please?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in, my friend, and you will be thrilled.
It's going to do it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, ever see a blind man cross the road trying to make the other side? Ever see a young girl growing old trying to make herself a bride? So what becomes of you, my love, when they have finally stripped you of the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy? That's a great song. That's Rod Stewart in an unknown, underrated song. Unknown except for the fact that I'm pretty sure it was the background music to The English Office.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Which is why I never watched The American Office, because I didn't think it could tell me anything. I'd watch The English Office. Handbags and Glad Rags, great song. Thanks to our guests today, Tim Legler, Jeff Passan. Thanks to today's sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. So when Sands was on Monday, we caught up with Courtney Blackstone.
Yes, she emailed
Sands
him.
Who Sands said was the hottest girl in high school, and he cheated off her in various tests. And she mentioned, I think, an uncle of hers, Don Sigmund, who used to go to Washington football games.
Put the headdress on.
So we get this from Joe Greer in Annapolis, Maryland. Today's reference to the late Don Sigmund reminded me of one of the many funny stories Don told me over the last 10 years of his life. Don had, shall we say, a flair for living large. One time, late 80s, early 90s, Don enjoyed a lengthy day playing golf at Woodmont and enjoying camaraderie afterwards. At the point where it was well past the time to leave, Don wisely chose not to drive, ambling his way to Rockville Pike to hail a cab for the safe ride home. Minutes passed without a cab, and Don noticed the Lido's Pizza in the plaza abutting the lengthy Woodmont Drive. Feeling peckish, Don walked to Lido's, ordered his favorite pie. When asked if he wanted to eat in or take it with him, Don loudly requested for the pie to be delivered and promptly gave an address in Georgetown. The perplexed cashier then asked innocently, "What are you going to do, sir?" With that, Don whipped out a $100 bill and said, "I am riding with the pie." That's pretty good. From Mark Hughes in Ashton, Maryland, Chuck and Roxy, number 292. Yes, there is frozen custard in Rehoboth. Core Brothers, K-O-H-R. Frozen custard. Been around since 1919, has three locations in Rehoboth. I am reminded of this. I know where one of them is. Two are on the ocean block, yes, of Rehoboth Avenue.
That's right.
One is on the boardwalk on Rehoboth Avenue. One location is by the Grotto Pizza on the south side of the street, and one on the north side between the old Dolly's location and the new location a few doors down. They do have the chocolate and vanilla swirl. All of this may be useless information for you, since the odds of getting a parking spot in the ocean block of Rehoboth Avenue are the odds, same odds as Dominic Smith hitting a meaningful home run, even in the minors. Very good email. From Paul Nelson in Rockville, Maryland. I was just listening to your fond recollection of frozen custard, especially Carvel. But you don't have to go to Virginia for such a treat. In Rockville, right off I-270, you can go to Carmen's Italian Ice. They always have a chocolate vanilla swirl on tap, along with plenty of other flavors, both of custard and Italian ice. We're there regularly. Give it a try. Michael, you and I have never had frozen custard together, or have we?
Together, like a swirl, like a creamsicle? No, I don't believe we've shared that yet.
Right, and we should. But yes. Again, the brown bonnet is what I'm talking about mostly.
Yeah. Dipped in chocolate.
That's special.
That's the way to
go. From Steve the Sycophant. Your discussion about the joys of frozen custard yanked my memory back to the late 1940s and early 1950s when, on a hot summer night in Lincoln, Nebraska, my mom and dad would say, "Let's go to Zesto." Zesto was a local soft-serve ice cream emporium much beloved by my younger brothers and myself. Once we arrived, an all-windows-open, non-air-conditioned Buick, I'd run to get in line and order my favorite, the dipped cone, vanilla dipped in the chocolate sauce. Not only was the chocolate nice and crispy, yes, it slowed down the melting process on a 90-degree August night. Even better, the store had a couple of bug lights, electrical contraptions which attracted bugs and vaporized them. The experience of licking a cone while watching a large bug fry on the light was a never-to-be-forgotten joy. Anytime I return to Lincoln, one of my first stops is the still-open Zesto, 11th and South Streets, to order a dipped. It's not the same with neither Mom nor Dad nor Bug Light, but it is still fun. From AJ in Arlington.
You can get the dip with the cherry crust or butterscotch there as well.
Really?
Ooh, yeah. Like
I didn't know that.
Zestos.
AJ in Arlington. At the end of Monday's episode, Nigel gave you the address of a Carvel ice cream shop in Arlington. I said, "Hey, I know that Carvel. I've never actually patronized the fine establishment, but I've made many trips to the joint it shares a building with Mario's Pizza House. Mario's is best known as the late-night food option of choice for the inebriates of Clarendon, a group I formerly identified with. I think the food there is pretty good, but to be honest, I don't really remember. So does this count as a David Aldridge moment?" Not exactly.
No, not really.
Dr. Tom O'Brien, who writes, "Growing up on the Yonkers-Bronx border, it was hard to drive a couple of miles without seeing a Carvel store. One Halloween night, at 13, I was busted by the YPD for egging, shaving, that's Yonkers Police Department, for egging, shaving, creaming our corner store because the owner was so mean to us kids. Tom Carvel started the business selling ice cream out of his truck. It broke down in Hartsdale and started melting. He ended up selling the melting ice cream in front of a pottery store, which became his first location. It gave him the idea of inventing his ice cream machine. I was always amazed the ice cream did not fall off when dipping to make the brown bonnet. Vanilla and strawberry were later added. But the real debate all these years was whether Fudgy the Whale and Cookie Puss were created with the same mold. I can verify that they are indeed different molds because my high school sweetheart worked in one." Isn't that nice? From Harry Hawkins, Chuck and Roxy, number 307. Harry was a caddy at Columbia. Remember Harry, Michael? He got a job at ESPN.
Great impersonations.
Yes, yes. He was terrific. On Monday's show, you read an email about the story of the famed Augusta National Green Jacket, which reminded me of the greatest Green Jacket story of them all, courtesy of six-time champ Jack Nicklaus. As Monday's emailer stated, the first Green Jacket was given to the Masters champion in 1949. They were given a spare one at first and then returned the next year with a tailored coat hanging in their locker. But when Nicklaus won his first Masters in 1963, he was given a jacket that was four sizes too big for him. And when he returned the following year, his locker was empty. So what did he do? He didn't tell anybody and borrowed the jacket of Augusta National member Thomas Dewey. Yes, that Thomas Dewey, former governor of New York, who rather famously did not defeat Harry Truman. When Nicklaus won again in 65 and 66, he wore Dewey's jacket on the 18th green and at the intervening champions dinner and continued to do so until he won his fourth Masters in 1972, after which Dewey's jacket wore out. So what did Nicklaus do? Since he had an endorsement deal with Hartshafter and Marks, he asked the Cincinnati-based clothing company to make him a green jacket. It wasn't the same color or the same material as the ones everyone else was wearing, but nobody noticed. And when that one wore out, Nicklaus went back to borrowing jackets from Augusta members to put on for his fifth and sixth Masters victories and wear to the champions' dinner. Finally, in 1997, he told the chairman of Augusta National he still didn't have a jacket of his own. He was told to go to the pro shop to be tailored for his own immediately, but Nicklaus, not wanting to ruin a great story, refused to do so. Alas, when the Golden Bear returned for the 1998 Masters, he found a note in his locker that said in no uncertain terms that he must go be tailored for his own green jacket. He marched to the pro shop, got his own jacket made, 44 regular, 35 years too late. Come on, man. What are we even doing now, man? Thank you, Harry.
That's great.
From Don Hammock in Biloxi, Mississippi. Sue Heidel's email about the green jacket was illuminating, but she mentioned a first-time winner is measured for his jacket within a month. Do they use a rope and a yardstick? From Stan Nocke, or Noke, K-N-O-C-K-E, I would say Nocke, Shawnee, Kansas. It was great to hear a snippet from Five Neat Guys, one of Melonville's greatest singing attractions. It not only invoked waves of nostalgia, but also regret that this talented group never recorded a mailbag intro. A tip of the hat to the recently departed great Joe Flaherty, a.k.a. Guy Caballero, a.k.a. Count Floyd. Keep up the good work, gang. You want to explain that you took the clip from SCTV?
Yeah, it was a fictional five-man singing group called Five Neat Guys with songs like, as we heard, Who Made the Egg Salad Sandwiches?
Here's one from James McManus, not Gene James. I was totally shocked to hear the Five Neat Guys singing Who Made the Egg Salad Sandwiches at the end of Monday's show. 42 years ago, I sponsored the club that did the Gong Show at the high school where I taught in Mechanicsville, Virginia, and I did the SCTV commercial with four of the students in the club. I can still sing all the songs. I always look forward to the end of November to hear it's December the 1st, and I'm starting to hurt because I can't get a date for New Year's on Sirius XM 60s Gold. Thanks, Pat St. John. And it's always great to hear Rick Moranis, Dave Thomas, Joe Flaherty, Eugene Levy, and John Candy. I don't want to get in a fight about what's greater, SCTV or Saturday Night Live. They're both great. They're both great, but SCTV is
yes.
Underappreciated.
Yes.
It's underappreciated.
Very much so.
The Reverend Mark Schaefer, major thanks to you, Nigel, I'm assuming, for the outro on the podcast from SCTV's Five Neat Guys. One of many, many brilliant sketches on that show, I recognized it, and Dave Thomas as the announcer immediately. I was hoping that the clip would last long enough to include Mom Pressed a Crease in My Chinos, but any SCTV is better than none. I certainly appreciate it coming on the heels of the news of the death of Joe Flaherty, a.k.a. newsman Floyd Robertson, alongside Eugene Levy's Earl Camembert. Count Floyd with Monster Chiller Horror Theater and SCTV station owner Guy Caballero, who sat in a wheelchair, not because he needed it, but for respect. So thank you for a brief SCTV moment and a fitting tribute to a comedy great.
Was great.
Nathan Ackerhelm, Charlotte, North Carolina. I Googled the Chipotle in Blacksburg across from the Residence Inn, and the first two reviews seem to summarize things well. One, last straw for this location. No meat and no beans again. Their number disconnects when you try to call and ask for a manager. Go elsewhere. Two, they're always out of everything. Don't come here unless you want to starve to death. Had Greg Garcia read these reviews, he wouldn't have bothered stopping setting foot in there. He went to Frostburg, however, and it doesn't sound like research was a big part of his 4 years there. That's unbelievable. How can they stay in business?
I don't know, but
I have a feeling he read the reviews first.
Okay. Brian Moeller, Reed Spring, Missouri. Sunday evening, we had our last night of spring golf league. There were about 10 of us, including the course pro, hanging out in the lounge, watching the Masters and waiting for the announcement of the league results. As I was telling a story about a bit of a disastrous hole I had, I decided to work in. I really flushed the mouse on that one, eager to see what the reaction would be. Now, I'm 99% certain none of these guys are littles, as I've made several other references in the past that have fallen on deaf ears. So as I dropped the FTM into the story, I was amazed to look about the room, being met with laughs and nods of agreement, as if I used a common expression we've all grown up with. To top it off, I also walked out with fourth overall and eight rounds worth of shop credit. Tell Alex Cobb to eat it. I put it on PTI the other day.
You did. It was great.
I got it into PTI the other day. Flush the mouse.
And said it casually as if this was a phrase we've been saying
forever.
Don't
know if anything's going to happen. From Dan Fahey or Fahey. I think maybe Fahey. I noticed a few weeks ago that you received a mailbag about NC State having more wins at Capital One Arena than the Wizards did this season. I'll have you know that the Wizards now have 7 home court victories this season. I think we can now safely say the Washington Wizards are almost certainly better than most teams in the ACC. Nobody, and I mean nobody, comes into Capital One Arena and outshines the Wizards. Well, except for most of the NBA teams that played there this year. From Scott Foster, can't wait for the Dan Byrne song about Val and Cookie Sands. You know, Scott Foster, not the referee, Scott Foster, Manchester, Maine. Val and Cookie Sands, that's funny. Brian Granger in Charlotte. Yeah, I know this email is late. I'm catching up from last week when I was traveling for the Eclipse and for the Masters. Yes, the Masters, all 4 days, but I digress. Did I just hear Sands say that Ovechkin will be the greatest Washington team sport athlete of all time? Huh? Apparently he missed the John Wall era. John Wall, we all missed it. The king of game 6. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Yeah, here's the thing. We're not the Wonders right now. We're Captain Geach and the Shrimp Shack Shooters.
Small ships in the sea, sailing to a new fantasy. to go home.